Economy's been a little rough, man.
Ah, man, just brutal.
You know, it's times like these that E-Trade can really help you replan your investments, though. You know, it gives you the tools and research. Take control. Rise up.
No. What?
Stop.
What? I can't flex the golden pipes?
It's not the venue.
It's inspirational.
Any place.
Fine.
Okay, where was
I? I'm going to fly again.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
No, I'm just poking at your funny bone. I am quite alarmed.
I don't think you realize the danger. Like the people who think it's okay to bring shampoo on an airplane.
Well, you know, it sort of goes back to the idea, too, that just because we don't believe in a lot of this stuff, not me and you, but I mean like the mainstream people, you know, where they're sort of like, there's no secret societies. They're not doing rituals and stuff like that, or that's not real. Like, just because the mainstream doesn't believe in it doesn't mean if they don't believe in it, then it doesn't have that power to them.
Oh, no, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the idea is that, you know, we are trapped in the dream world of Saturn, and so the fact that we're unaware of it, that's almost the definition of a dream, you know, except for a lucid dream. I guess that's the concept of waking up, right? You waking up from the Matrix, you sort of wake up and you realize that you're in this dream, but, you know, can you really get out of the dream? I don't know. Or would you want to? when you have a lucid dream, that's when you sort of realize, like, oh, I'm really in control of this. I thought I was just, you know, a victim of it all, but really, I can fly if I want to. I don't have to run away from the monster. I can beat it, you know. And I think that, you know, that's the best we can hope for. I think we are in a dream. We're in an illusion, you know. I really believe that, you know, that. The universe is really always primal chaos, and the only thing that organizes the chaos into something meaningful is your body, your senses, your cognitive ability to put it all together. So I think that in that sense, we're always in a dream and an illusion, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the nature of reality.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And that beyond just the body, too, it's the sort of like that collective agreement on things, how people all agree that the dollar is worth something, or people all agree that this is the way things should be, or, you know, sort of like a self-sustaining normalcy, if you will.
Right. And when that agreement starts to break down, that's when everything becomes unstable and sort of surreal, and, you know, and I think that's what's going on. Like, we can't agree on the value of the dollar anymore, or anything else. So, you know, we're in this period of instability right now where nothing is certain and things are turning to chaos, and it will be up to that, you know, alchemical agent of the future to bring it all back together again and form something new out of it.
It makes you wonder, too, because I don't know if we really got into this. I mean, I sort of introduced this, but then I feel like we didn't really get into it. And this sort of adds to what I'm going to say next. So
yeah, go ahead.
How I was saying that I wonder if the alchemical idea of power being derived from babies comes from lost original knowledge of the power of stem cells. And I'm sort of wondering in turn, you know, you talk about this Saturn age. I'm not a huge believer sort of in the ancient astronauts idea, but I am sort of a believer in this idea that the ancient cultures were more advanced than we give them credit for. And it just makes you wonder if there's sort of like a scientific background to a lot of this alchemical stuff. You know, if there was science involved first, then it got lost and turned into alchemy because it was based on myths and legends and rumors and stuff. And now it's sort of coming back into fruition via science. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I think that I don't know exactly what to make of it, but I don't dismiss it. There's something literally real about this concept that the people of these various ages of the Gold Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and then there's the Stone Age in the Greek myths, where they said that after the flood, the hero of the flood myth was told to take stones from the ground and toss them behind him, and the stones, when they hit the ground, would magically turn into people, and that's the race that we presently are, according to that version of the myth. that I really believe that there's something to that. There's some reason why the Greeks remembered the root races of these earlier ages as being somehow literally metallic, you know. And I'm thinking that that's, they're getting that from the perspective of these gods, whatever they were. And you said, you know, you mentioned ancient astronauts. They could have been that. Who knows? It's like we can't possibly see, we can't get the perspective we need to understand what the gods really were and
right.
where they came from and all of that. But from their perspective, as the sort of genetic engineers of our race and all of these other races, they may have literally thought of us as, oh, those are the gold people because we put some sort of metallic element in them, and those are the silver people because we use silver for that one. And if you think about it, you know, some of the versions of the myth say that we're the Iron Age. Well, what is it that, what is the active element in your blood, you know, but iron, and what makes it circulate in a way? I mean, it's we really are the Iron Age. We really are
right.
the Iron people, you know.
And could they have known that really back in the day that the blood was primarily iron?
I don't think so.
Exactly. So it makes you wonder if there was like some advanced knowledge of the sciences that we don't give them credit for knowing. Even if it didn't have anything to do with ancient aliens. I don't know what else it could be. Or you know, there's sort of another idea too, that the human race, you know, reached levels where we're at now and then wiped itself out and started all over again, sort of idea. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? I mean, that could be something that could have happened. We don't know. But I do think that these sort of myths and legends and in turn, you know, arcane sort of alchemical and occult stuff have roots in something that was tangible and real at some point.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. It's just that it's so hard for us to understand the perspective of the people that, I guess, were originally told these stories.
Right.
And it seems like there's this memory of this cataclysm, and what was happening before the cataclysm is so vague, you know, it's all mixed up. And, you know, I've tried to deconstruct the chronology of the pre-Diluvian history, and it's impossible. I find that all the pre-Diluvian stories are so messed up that you can go to from one culture and it'll tell you a chronology, and that all makes sense. And then you go to another culture and you'll find similar myths and names of people and things like that, but it's not in the same order. And it just seems like that, you know, so I guess we have this myth of there being no time in the Golden Age, partially because we can't remember it well enough to reconstruct it anymore. And, you know, I mean, I'm really open to the idea. I don't know. I'm open to all ideas, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's
yeah.
like, To ask, oh, what planet did the ancient astronaut gods come from? Is to assume that they had to have a planet. To say,
right, right. Because
to say, how did time start? Well, how can you start time? You know.
Right. Exactly. Well, I mean,
of time.
I use the ancient astronaut idea just as a sort of catch-all, but I mean, this with the way science is advancing in this sort of like interdimensional idea too, that, you know, you don't know, these could have been people who could cross dimensions or something like that.
That's absolutely what I think. And it's a large part of the article that I just wrote. I'm talking about the concept of Saturn's kingdom as a timeless place that can be created at any time and place. And, I also got into the concept of that's what Noah's Ark was too. And in the Sumerian version of that story, the flood hero Utnapishtim was told through gods that were speaking to him through the walls of his house that there was going to be a flood and he needed to construct an ark to save himself. And so he made an ark out of his own home, and it was a perfect cube. And basically, he just, you know, boarded up his house in a way, and there was some construction, but at any rate, just think of it as, you know, what if you created an ark from your own bedroom? How would you do that? Well, it's very similar, I think, to how magicians will create, ceremonial magicians will create sacred space in their temple, and then they'll have a magic circle that they create where they can either stand inside of the magic circle and then they can evoke demons in the room around them and they'll be safe as long as they stay inside of the magic circle.
Right.
They'll be safe from the demons, or vice versa. You might evoke a demon into the circle and then the demon can't leave the circle and you can do what you need to with them without fear that he's going to do something to you. So at any rate, it's this idea that you can somehow through magical processes create a different dimension, really, create this timeless realm of Saturn within your own home. And I think that, you know, that's really the concept that we're dealing with here with Noah's Ark and in this mountain that the Ark always washes up on in these stories. They said the gods of Olympus went to the top of the mountain during the flood. What this really means is going up into a higher dimension to the point where, you know, everything around you dissolves into chaos, but you're safe inside the hermetically sealed Athanor of the temple that you've created, the ark that you've created. And then when you come out, you're in a whole new world. So, and then I think that, if something like that literally happened, when you come out of the ark and you're in this new world, it may not all be solidified yet. It's like a new creation. And just as in the beginning of the world when it was created, in the Bible it talks about how there were these primeval waters, and then there's this process, these days of creation that it goes through where everything sort of solidifies. I think that would have happened again to Noah when he comes out of the ark. And so you have this period in which the floodwaters are subsiding and he has to wait. You know, he has this bird that he uses to as a trial, you know, to find out if there's any land yet to walk out on. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about this as an alchemical process and yourself being Noah, you're like the baby inside the Athanor. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting concept, I think.
I think there's some scientific underpinnings to this, which I would like to see you explore as you go forward.
Yeah, well, you know, my husband is more of the more into like evolutionary biology and stuff. He's more of an expert on that stuff, and maybe he can figure it out. I mean,
You guys can team up.
Well, yeah, I don't pretend to be a scientist at all, so I'm trying to analyze these myths and what they may have been trying to express, but I have absolutely no claim to know, you know, whether it's the Pleiadians or what year it happened or anything like that. And as far as, you know, yeah, what's the biology of the different root races? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows that kind of thing. That's anyone who tells you they know that, run away, because they're trying to sell you something. Speaking of which, I noticed in the book you're not a fan of monatomic gold. You don't believe in that whole thing?
Oh, well, I actually got a lot of crap from people when I did the Red Ice interview. I got lots of praise from the audience, but I did get several emails from members of the monatomic gold cult who were really passionate about that and thought that I had defamed them. And so I told them, you know, well, I'll take a second look at it, but which I haven't really done, so, you know, give me time before I revise my statement on that. But my experience with that, I've known some people who knew some people who had some bad experiences with that, having to do with the stuff that they were buying. They took it for years and then had liver problems.
Oh, God.
And then found out that it was table salt. They had someone analyze what they'd been swallowing all this time, and they were just taking massive amounts of salt, and it was actually causing them health problems. So,
buyer beware.
I need to take a second look at it, and maybe I didn't mean to like to say that anyone in particular was ripping anyone else off. I'm not making any claims like that, but you know, it definitely seems, I don't know, kind of it needs to be proven to me that, you know, this is that someone has discovered a cure-all, you know, and it has to do with transmuting gold into another dimension. I mean, that's what I remember reading, is the process.
Yeah, it was something like that. I've only sort of vaguely looked at it myself, so I can't. All I know is that it was sort of like somehow they boil gold and turn it into powder or something like that, and that turns it into monatomic gold, and then you eat it.
I mean, it sounds like they're definitely trying to recreate, you know, the alchemical process, and one of the ways that you could use alchemy, according to the old text, was, yeah, you could create an alchemical substance that could be swallowed, and then supposedly it would, you know, cure everything in your body and make you live forever. And so, you know, it definitely sounds like they're trying to do that. How well it's worked, I don't know. I've never tried it myself, and I would really have to know more about it before I would swallow that stuff. But, you know, the people that wrote to me, I don't know, maybe, you know, I didn't mean to offend anyone, but the passion with which they responded and sort of the fierceness with which they criticized me, and also the fact that I got a cluster of these emails all together.
Yeah.
What it reminded me of is the time that I said something defamatory about Scientology.
Uh-oh.
When I was writing for the school paper when I was 16, and I got the same sort of response, except it was a bit more intense, and they actually tracked me down. They tried to do a personal intervention to convince me that Scientology was great. So I don't know. I guess I'm probably going to get even more letters now. But the people that wrote to me reminded me of Scientologists.
Well, that at least they didn't. I was afraid you were going to say they tried to beat you up. So instead of trying to beat you up, they just try to indoctrinate you, right?
Yeah, like, well, what? How could you question the, you know,
teaching of Xenu?
Exactly.
Great. Now I'm going to get letters.
Probably.
Well, based on what aren't you like banned in Pakistan too, or something like that?
You know, I don't. No.
Any news on that fatwa? Are you free of that yet, or are you, no plans to head on over to Pakistan to find out, I assume?
Well, look, I still stand by my position on that issue of that people should be free to make Muhammad cartoons or any other type of cartoon they want to, and that it's not the job of any non-Muslim to observe Muslim taboos. Which is why the Supreme Court of Pakistan had banned me and my husband and my website and tried to extradite us.
Wow.
To face the death penalty. But I guess what I'm getting at is I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. No, I don't really care. What I'm saying is that I don't want any fatwas because I'm planning on going to Turkey and Alexandria at the end of the in October,
because
we're going to have there's some sort of tour we're going to do that I'll announce the details of later, and I'm hoping that no one comes and chops my head off.
Oh Jesus, Tracy, will you be careful? I wouldn't even go anywhere near there. Oh Jesus, couldn't they grab you in Turkey and bring you to Pakistan?
No, Turkey's supposed to be civilized.
Oh, famous last words of Tracy Twyman, folks. Oh my God! All right, well, keep us informed on that. I'll keep an eye out for for the news when you head over to Turkey. Jeez.
Sure.
What is what's that all about? Some kind of adventure?
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could tell you more, but
it's still under wraps
until April, and then I'll tell everyone. It's going to be a trip that people can go on, and we're going to be giving lectures and going to ancient sites, and we're going to be talking about the myth of Atlantis and this golden age concept, and, you know, actually going to the places where some of these myths happened, and or the historical things that they're based on, and having a good time being initiated into the mysteries of the golden age. So I'll have an itinerary and prices and everything posted probably within a month or so.
Nice, nice. Do you want to go a little longer, or you got something going on? I was going
to
try and...
Well, if you've got some more to say, then let's say it.
I always have more to say, Tracy. That's my job. Now, not to get into the too predictive realm of things, but, you know, based on the economy right now, where do you sort of see things headed out as the year progresses? Because as we talked about earlier, you know, you're saying that things aren't going to improve, that, you know, the worst is sort of yet to come. We may see even worse, you know, economic downturns and whatnot. So I guess, what do you see that might happen, and what should we look for as clues to this sort of stuff unfolding?
Well, I'll tell you this. we, as the general public, we need to give up on this idea that it is going to get better by itself. It being, you know, the current system of money and debt. It can't. There's $700 trillion worth of derivatives that can't be paid, clogging up the international system. That's been true for years. And nothing that they've devised is ever going to fix it, because the entire system, every time you create money, you're creating more debt associated with it. So you can never get less debt. You will always get more. So it's got to die. And people have got to get over the fact that their pensions will collapse, and their savings, if they're dollars or based on dollars, are going to collapse. The value of their house is going to collapse. You need to get over it, because I'm serious.
I know, it's just such a harsh thing. You know, it's like, listen, you're going to lose everything you have. Just get over it. I mean, but I guess I mean, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, no. Well, if you're someone who has a lot of resources and you've got it all in bank accounts and stocks and things like that, you need to put it into something physical that you can use or sell to someone who could use it in the future world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, gas is going to be valuable. Property is going to be valuable, not in terms of dollars. Stop thinking about your house as how many dollars it's worth. It's like, can I live in this place for the rest of my life? Can my children use it? Can I sell it to someone in the future for something that I could use? You know, that's the way you need to start thinking about the real basis of wealth. And if you have money now, I would say transfer it into those things as quickly as possible, because this collapse that I'm talking about it's in process right now. And then, you know, the next big drop down could happen at any moment. They're going to have another wave of quantitative easing, which is printing enormous amounts of money out of nothing and then having the government itself buy it through its complicated, but they try to fake you out. They try to pretend that there's banks in the Cayman Islands and stuff buying these bonds, but they're really doing it on behalf of the Federal Reserve. So the Treasury is printing money. They're borrowing from the Federal Reserve in order to print that money, but then the Federal Reserve is buying the bonds that it's based on. So it's like eating yourself, if we get back to alchemy. It's like this Ouroboros serpent eating itself.
Yeah. Now, are you familiar with Bix Weir and his work at all?
Someone else told me.
It might have been me when we were setting up the interview. Road to Ruta and that whole thing. Have you looked into it at all?
No. Please, go ahead. Elaborate.
The gist of it is that, and I'm going to do a terrible job of this. I apologize to Bix. You should definitely check out his stuff. That there's sort of... Yeah, and you kind of alluded to this too earlier, that there's sort of like these good forces at work behind the scenes in this system, in this economic system that's been thrust upon the world, and that there's people within the system that are aware of this impending financial collapse and are sort of, you know, have a plan to deal with it after the fact, and, you know, there's going to be this big collapse, and both sides, the good and the bad, have been orchestrating the collapse. You know, for their own purposes. You know, the good side realizes that the fiat system can never last, so it created the fiat system to sort of milk it for what it's worth, then collapse, and then rebuild. And the bad guys sort of want, like, a new world order. So, I mean, what do you think of that? Like I said, I probably butchered the theory in general, but that's sort of the general idea of it.
Well, okay, yeah, I need to read about it more, I guess, but my reaction is this, that there are several factions of good guys and or bad guys, and then several factions of people that consider themselves to be good guys. What that means is entirely relative and subjective to them, because we don't know. We're not involved. They haven't initiated us into those mysteries of what they intend to do with us and our wealth at the end of it. Mm-hmm. So as far as someone calling themselves the good guy and they're going to work behind the scenes on our behalf, you know, I reject that as being done in my name. I am the only one that can save me, and that goes for everyone else too. And the idea that some savior from another planet or from another secret society or the good witch of the West or whatever is going to come and save you without you having to understand these concepts and save yourself is wrong. I mean, anyone who arrogates to themselves that responsibility of manipulating the lives of others and deciding who lives and who dies and who gets to have wealth and who doesn't and how much the money in your wallet should be worth, those people need to be overthrown and never given any power. I mean, if you're asking what my opinion is and my value system, I think, I reject that.
Okay.
Maybe they're trying to do it. You know, they can call themselves good and say that they're trying to do it. That's
so, okay.
You know,
so you're saying, like, you reject the people who say they're doing it for good. But you don't reject the idea that there are people who think that they're doing it for good.
Exactly. But, yeah, you want to work behind the scenes with your little secret society and your banker friends trying to create a good system of international economics and international political control. Well, all political control and all banking as it's set up right now is about people owning other people and selling them without their permission. So if you think there's some good way of doing that, I disagree.
Well, part of the road to Ruta theory is additionally that, you know, there's going to be this big collapse. The good guys, now I'm starting to remember a little bit more of it. The good guys, they're going to sort of bring the United States back into sort of a separatist situation where we're going to produce everything on our own. We're not going to get involved. You know, it's the reverse of a New World Order, I guess you could say. I guess from what I can recall, Bix was saying that, you know, the United States has plenty of natural resources and that we've been sort of hoarding them all this time and using the rest of the world's natural resources because we knew that eventually this reverse New World Order is going to happen because the good guys behind the scenes were orchestrating it.
Hmm.
What do you think of that? Does the United States have all these resources or, I mean, you're up on all this economic stuff.
I think we've got lots of resources and that we would have a very robust economy if we only imported things that we actually needed from other countries, as opposed to, like we were talking about earlier, shipping apples to China to be waxed and brought back.
Right.
That's just sad. Yeah, there's lots of stuff we could produce and consume here, and we could be exporting more as well. And other countries could be doing that too, and then we could be wasting a lot less resources in shipping things around. But it's like the resources aren't considered to have any value. The only thing that has value is the artificial illusory dollar. And, you know, that's what all of these economic policies are built around, is people getting their hands on dollars and controlling the value of and distribution of dollars. And they're not thinking at all about how many actual resources, in other words, how much actual wealth is being wasted in order to do this. So I think it'd be great if, you know, in the future, people in countries could take care of themselves more and be, you know, healthier and happier for it, because they're not wasting resources and their labor, the value of their labor would go up. You know, that'd be great. And it doesn't mean that we have to be isolationist or that we don't communicate and interact with one another, and quite the opposite. The world is more interactive than it's ever been. That's part of the reason why there's so many social revolutions going on right now, is because anyone at any time can go online and get information about just about anything. And even things that used to be super secret and hard to find, it's just out there now. You know,
yeah.
WikiLeaks is a huge resource. And then you've got Facebook and things like that, where it's making it just really easy for people in different countries to make friends and compare notes. And so you used to be able to, you know, a government could sort of keep their own domestic population ignorant of what they're doing in other countries, or tell them a false version of what life is like in other countries. And that can't happen anymore. You know, I mean, some people might still believe the version they get on TV, but those are mainly older people. And, you know, people like in their 50s and younger are online. They have tons of friends in other countries, and they have a way different perspective now because of that. And then you have this instant communication if you do need to have a social revolution, if you do need to have people be able to coordinate something really quickly without having to physically be in the same space. You can do that now. So, you know, we're going to be a more cosmopolitan world than ever in the future, and it doesn't have to involve a global supply chain of slave labor, you know? That's not needed.
Yeah, we just hope we can break the cycle and free ourselves from that global supply chain. Although you're kind of saying that it's going to fall apart anyway, right?
Yeah, there's no effort needed on our part except to try to keep ourselves safe from the fallout. But the collapse is happening, and as it collapses, people are going to still need to do business. In fact, more than ever, you know, you're going to have needs for goods and services to be produced locally. So I think the recovery begins as soon as the collapse is allowed to happen, you know. You can have local currencies created, and that'll start happening immediately, and people can start doing business with one another. And that's the problem is that, you know, we're required by law to use the dollar for everything and to be involved in these systems of government and taxation and these rules about federal rules about you know, labor laws and how you can produce things, and there's so many rules, you know, and we're all trapped into this system that's just not allowed to change at all, even though it's not working and everyone's literally dying, you know.
Yeah.
You know, their economic lives are dying because of this. It's, you know, if you could just free yourself from that yoke, that we no longer have to be pinned to this dollar, then that's, you know, then the invisible hand that Adam Smith wrote about, the sort of mystical force that underpins the economy, where people act in their own self-interest to try to get the things they want in the best quality at the lowest possible price. That if everyone is allowed to do that as an individual, but the government is not allowed to come in with a force of arms and violently threaten other people to do what they want to try to create a monopoly system for certain you know, rich people that they like that are contributing to the politicians, you know, bank accounts and stuff. If you can get rid of that and the artificial manipulation of the economy, then people's following their own selfish desires is actually good, because that keeps things at you know, high quality and low price, but everyone still gets what they need. That's the ideal to me. That's like, that would be the golden age, you know, if we could really have the invisible hand actually allowed to function.
Well, is that what you think is going to happen when everything collapses, that a more robust and sort of natural economy will sort of develop?
Yeah. I think the invisible hand, you know, it's operating all the time. It operated in communist Russia. It operates in North Korea. It operates wherever people are. But it's how well it is allowed to function is relative to how much government control you have and other. If you don't want to call it government, then sometimes you'll have you know, corporations that do the same thing. They gain control over the economy because they can pay police and soldiers to threaten other people and make them do what they want. And that's really the basis of government and corporate power, and it's the reason why our economy consistently always gets screwed up and manipulated so that, you know, all of the wealth that's produced by the people flows in one direction only. It's confiscated through a system of taxation and other things. It's channeled to the ruling elite, and always, you know, the people suffer. The people are never allowed to enjoy the fruits of their own labor. That's a corrupt system that comes from greedy people colluding and then using violence to threaten other people. And that's the only reason why the invisible hand doesn't work. That's the reason why you can't have economic freedom.
Yeah, but then when you think about it, hasn't it always sort of been that way? I mean, weren't there always kings and servants and everything else? I mean, you wonder if that's just the human nature, if you will, where greed just, you know, Even if the whole system collapses tomorrow and then we develop a new system, eventually that system will become corrupted as well, and the whole process will start all over again, I think.
Yes, that's why the golden age can only exist in a timeless state, a theoretical state, because it doesn't really ever happen.
So is it more metaphorical?
It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor here's what I think of it is. It's in potentia. It exists in non-existence, but it influences everything that does exist, just like this hidden kingdom at the center of the earth concept. I think it's real in the sense that, or I don't know, I guess you could say it's unreal, but it's like, that's a part of our existence, you know? At the heart of every atom, there is something mysterious that you can't explain, and that's going on in the whole universe, you know? So the Golden Age exists in a timeless state at all times, and as far as us going into a new Golden Age now, of course, it would only be temporary, but it would be a start over. It would be from going from one dying system to a new one, and so you'd have, you know, the whole course of history then, the next several thousand years, for it to become as corrupt as it is now.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
I don't know if I want to be around at the start of a new golden age. Sounds like that would be a lot of setting things up and planning and everything else. You really want to be in the golden age in its prime, right? I guess there's no time, right? So, but you know,
right.
You know what I mean? The transition to the golden age is going to be difficult, so it's like, I don't even know if I'd make it.
Me too. I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about it before. I don't have the resources necessary to be able to survive. So I don't to survive such a cataclysm. I don't know if I will.
Now, in light of all this sort of idea of changing of the ages and that sort of thing, you know, I'm tempted to bring up the infamous 2012. I mean, what do you think of that? Does this somehow tie into all this in a way?
I think it may, in a way. It's, you know, that's the sort of thing that it would be asinine for me to make a real prediction, although I'm writing about the symbolism of it and the connections of it in a future article that you will see soon. But I'm not going to just make an ass of myself and say what's going to happen on 2012.
No. I don't mean that. Have you looked at it in the sense that is there some connection here between those myths and legends of a change of an epoch to what you're talking about with the age of Saturn and all this other stuff?
Well, there's some connection. One of the things I wrote about in the past when I did Daggerbear's Revenge magazine, I decoded out of some literature from the secret society called the Priory of Zion, that they had apparently this secret of a calendar that it seemed to me was a calendar that we haven't yet gone into, but it can, perhaps in the future, it could actually correspond to the year. And it's a calendar that's sort of observed, but it's not practical right now. It's the lunar calendar, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of lunar calendar.
Yeah, 364 days in the year and, you know, 12 or 13 months of exactly 28 days each. Every week is the same, starts on the same day of the week and everything.
And one day out of time.
Right, exactly. But what I wrote about in my article a long time ago was theorizing, well, what if things just change slightly? The orbit and the tilt and everything just change slightly on our planet so that maybe in the future we could have what they call an Alcott calendar, which is when the solar calendar and the lunar calendar correspond exactly. And right now they're a day and a few hours off. The solar calendar is a little bit longer. So, but what we've had recently, interestingly enough, is we keep having incidents that cause minor shifts in the tilt of the axis, the weight of the Earth, the shape of the Earth, and the magnetic pole.
Right, like the earthquake.
Uh-huh. Well, and, okay, in my article years ago that I wrote about this concept that there's maybe a secret Priory of Zion calendar that's supposed to be used at a future age, I talked about Ophiuchus or Fucus, the serpent bearer, which is a constellation, and in some New Age theories they think that there should be a 13th zodiac sign, really, because the zodiac doesn't correspond to, you know, mm-hmm. the way it was back in ancient Babylon when they came up with the thing. And that's been true for thousands of years. The zodiac has been wrong for thousands of years, but for some reason, around the turn of this last year, around the beginning of January, there was a big change in the magnetic pole.
Yeah.
It wobbles around anyway, but it was like it was a significant change in one day. It was bigger than normal, and they had to like recalibrate
airports
compasses
and stuff.
On airports and stuff. Yeah, on airplanes. So, and then right around that time that happened, the Minnesota Planetarium Society came out and said, we need to change the zodiac that everyone observes because of this pole shift, and there really should be another zodiac sign in there. And so that was a story in the news for a few days, and I don't know if it really caught on, but, I don't know. I get spam frequently where it says, your zodiac sign may have changed, so it must be popular.
Yeah, it created quite a meme, and accompanied by a lot of various sort of arcane conspiracy theories, about what,
right.
what it was all about. You know, like,
well,
there had to be some, what's the reasoning behind this? Whether it's some planetary change that's about to happen or we're undergoing, or is it, something else? Who knows? You know.
Well, I had said that, I think maybe there is, some elite cabal somewhere that decided that maybe we should bring in Ophiuchus or Fucus now, because in the Priory of Zion literature I was talking about, that's one of the things they mention. They say that we should have a 13 house zodiac sign, a zodiac system with Ophiuchus in it. And there's a poem that the Priory of Zion published called Les Serpents Rouges, where they have each of the stanzas is dedicated to one of the houses of the zodiac, and Ophiuchus is one of them. So I thought when I was, finding the clues in their literature pointing to this calendar, and it was really arcane. I mean, I'm the only one who ever found it. I don't think anyone else had even guessed that this thing was in there. And they talk about Ophiuchus too. And I thought, well, this must be part of it. That in a future calendar system, you'll have each month associated with one of the houses of the zodiac, and so you have to add a 13th one in there. And then when this pole shift happened and this meme started popping up, I thought, this can't be coincidence, because why do you need to bring Ophiuchus in now when the zodiac's been wrong for thousands of years? And here's an interesting thing that I published on my website. Someone told me that there's 12 images that came with the Kindle. That was the new version of the Amazon Kindle that came out right around Christmas last year.
Yeah.
And of those 12 images, they seem kind of random. There's like an author and a cathedral and just different things, a bird or something, just different things. And one of them is Ophiuchus. And, what are the odds of that? That was just a couple months before the pole shift and the explosion of this meme. And there's no other zodiac signs that are being used as screensavers on the Kindle, but there's just 12 images, and Ophiuchus is one of them. Isn't that weird?
It's strange. There's something to this story. It's, you just wonder about who's pulling the strings, What we don't know what their agenda is at the end of the day. It's scary.
Yeah. And then the 2012 thing, I got into 2012 a little bit when I originally wrote that article about the 364-day calendar. Because you know how the Mayans have actually several different calendar systems, and then the Mayan calendar that they talk about is really, it's like this big circle with different rings in it,
yeah.
And each ring is a different type of calendar system.
Yeah, it's all very confusing.
Well, and then they all come to an end at 2012. Anyway, I had sort of delved into that in my old article, because one of the calendar systems, one of the rings on there is a lunar calendar, is a 364-day one. So, and then the number 13 has all sorts of important symbolic meanings in the Mayan calendrical system, having to do with rebirth.
Interesting.
So, yeah, the symbol at the very top of the of the calendar, the Mayan calendar disc thing that they always show, there's this little, like carrot thing, like an arrow pointing up.
Yeah.
And that, they call that 13 Cain. And that's like the central image. That's the starting and ending of the whole cycle. So anyway, yeah, I think there might be something to it. You know, I just don't know. I don't know what. I certainly hope it's not horrible cataclysm, but I can't rule that out. And in general, when astrologically or astronomically, when an age passes over from one to the next, first of all, you only realize it after the fact, like hundreds of years later. You know, it, in terms of, it, has there actually been a social change?
Right, right.
Yeah, you only realize that later. But the moment, astrologically, that one age changes to the next is very specific. You know, it's a point in time.
Right.
So just like 2012 is, it's a point in time when maybe that is the point where one age changes to the next. But that doesn't mean anything happens at that particular moment any more than something happens at midnight on New Year's Eve. You know, it's just it's an arbitrarily chosen moment that where we say, okay, now it's the next day. But you know, you only realize later why one day is different from the other.
Exactly. To leave people on sort of an informative note here, like we didn't really get to what they should look for as far as warning signs here in the next few weeks, months, and you know, the rest of the year, if not next year or whatever. If we're on the precipice here, what should people be keeping an eye on aside from like gas prices and stuff like that?
Well, the release of QE3, the next explosion of liquidity, the next multi-hundred-billion-dollar purchase of bonds by the Federal Reserve itself, of Treasury bonds, you know, that is another inflation bomb that's going to be released. And the pattern of states that are dying and going into hyperinflation is that things like that just happen more and more frequently. You know, we just had a wave of quantitative easing a few months ago, and before that it had been like a year and a half till we had the first one. So if we have QE3, then, you know, presumably QE4 will be right on the heels of it shortly afterwards, and that's when things just start devolving. You know, but I'm not Gerald Celente, so I can't
yeah.
give you specific advice about investments, and I don't claim to know what day anything is going to happen. But, you know, I also think that they're going to bring in the SDR, so you can look for the dollar losing a great deal of value, but at the same time, the whole global system will try to find a new equilibrium or a new footing with this new global currency. And the U.S. dollar probably, at least in the beginning, won't cease to exist. It'll just be a domestic currency again instead of being an international currency.
Or yeah.
It'll be kind of like the pound is right
euro.
Now where, well, yeah, and the euro, like these are part of the international monetary system's basket of currencies that they use. They like put them together and they have a little algorithm that they use to try to determine how much everyone else's currency should be based on the relative values of those currencies in the basket. Now, the way it's been up until recently is you've got the yen and the pound and the euro and the dollar in the basket. Now, the Chinese want the yuan in the basket as well. And every time you put in a new currency in the basket, that disrupts that changes the algorithm, right? It changes the relationship. And it gives that currency a different power in international currency markets that it didn't have before. And, of course, right, the way it's been up until now is that the dollar had an inordinate amount of power in the basket compared to everyone else.
Right.
Well, now it's just going to be brought down to basically the same relative level as everyone else's currencies in the basket.
All right.
So
not
you know,
as scary
yeah.
as the last time we talked, but still pretty scary.
Well, look, now, hey, scary is relative, isn't it? Scary is
That's
relative.
True.
Because a lot of things have happened since the last time we talked that were scary at the time to think about, and now they've happened, and we're used to it, you know?
I mean, like what? Like people all losing their houses and shit?
Oh, yeah, people, yeah, the mass unemployment. I don't know if you've been to the grocery store lately, but we're starting to get major waves of food price inflation, which is one of the factors in why there's social revolutions going on in the Middle East right
yeah.
now is those people, they can't even afford to eat.
Right, right, because if you think our prices are going up, their prices are going up too, and they make, like, nothing. So
well,
they're
they make
hurting
nothing.
Worse than
they,
us.
Yeah, and they're spending like probably 70% of their income on food already, you know, they were before this happened.
Right.
And so, yeah, that stuff is happening. The reason why it doesn't feel any worse, I think, is because gas prices went down after the 2008. They didn't ever go down to, you know, $2 or $1.50 like they were before. But this is the new normal. We're used to that now.
Right, right.
But everything else has really fallen apart just more and more. And as far as the international stability of other states, you know, that's it really has changed a lot since last time we talked. You know, you've got Greece going down, Iceland, Ireland, and, you know, the euro, they're basically saying they need to phase it out. You know, things have totally happened since the last time we talked. We just got used to it. You know, as it happens, it seems normal to you. So that's why I don't want to make a prediction, because it won't matter. By the time it comes true, you won't even feel like you won't say, "Oh, she told me that." It'll be normal. You know.
Right. Right. No, I wasn't asking you for predictions. Don't worry. I know you're no General Salente. I like Gerald. I don't know. We shouldn't pick on him.
No, I love him too, and I can't hold a candle to that. I don't have the statistical knowledge to be able to say what future trends are going to be formed by current events. I can only analyze the sort of mythological and metaphorical basis behind it, and therefore I can make a very general prediction about what the next stage is going to be.
Well, you're fantastic at analyzing the mythical and metaphorical basis, as we've established here in this conversation. So, you know, I hope I kept up as well as I thought I did. So.
Oh, yeah. I think this has been a great conversation. I've enjoyed it.
So you got the new book here, Money Grows on the Tree of Knowledge, and you got that not just as a hard copy book, but also an e-book, and you're in the world of Kindle, I assume, right?
Yeah, yeah. What we had done was we put out a limited edition print version that is completely sold out now, but there will be another one that's not limited edition soon that you'll be able to buy on Amazon. And also, yeah, you can buy from us an ebook version of it, or you can get a Kindle version from Amazon. If you're interested in supporting me and my research, I could certainly use it. And the best way to do that is to make a purchase directly from my website. You can go to TracyRTwyman.com to find out how to do that. And I also take donations. And honestly, the best purchase you can make is an ebook or several ebooks, because it's really pure profit for me. I'm not going to lie. It's an electronic thing that I send to you, and I don't have to expend any further resources to get it. So I get to keep all of the money that you send me, less the PayPal fee. But, you know, it's not like I'm – I guess I am sort of alchemically making gold here every time I sell an ebook. But, you know, consider that I put
all the work into writing
and hours
books, yeah.
into that. So, you know, I feel like I'm I certainly, if I get more compensation for my work, I won't feel like I don't deserve it, is, I guess, the way to put it. So if you want to help me, it's certainly welcome and appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. You're like a farmer. You know, you've built the crop of the book, and now you're selling it. You shouldn't feel bad about that. I mean, I don't see what's wrong with that. The research is tremendous, and the books are outstanding. So
thank you. Thank you very much.
People should definitely check them out. I got to get into this Kindle thing. I haven't really dived into Kindle yet, but the more I talk to you and other people, it seems like that's the new direction of books.
Absolutely. I think, that's a brilliant new development, and I'm pretty excited about it. It's gonna keep publishing alive even as everything else collapses.
So what else? What do we have coming up from Tracy Twyman aside from the big trip, which details will be revealed soon? What else is going on? What can people expect from you here for the remainder of 2011?
Well, I'm developing these concepts of the new Golden Age and Saturn and the sort of the Hidden Kingdom concept. And I'm getting into the Black Sun and the idea of there's theories about the role of electromagnetism in the universe that I'm learning about that actually tie into everything I've been talking about Saturn and the Golden Age. It's hard to explain. You'll have to read the article. But they're physics concepts that contradict accepted concepts right now about nuclear physics and the theory of relativity and everything. It's a different way of looking at the universe. And when you do, then you can actually explain some of the myths of the past in a different way. And I'll explain all of that in future articles. So you'll be able to read articles about this stuff over the next few months in on TracyRTwyman.com. And then eventually a new book will be produced. And also we've got that trip coming up where we'll be actually visiting some of these places and people can hear lectures about it. Some of the places that are involved and some of the historical sites that that pertain to Greek myths of the past.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's what I got going on. I'm going to develop these concepts further and new books coming out and hopefully get it all developed before the new age dawns. And here's one thing I'll throw out for you that I forgot to mention. December 23rd, 2012, that's the end of the Mayan calendar. It's also the beginning of Saturnalia. It's the St. Dagobert's Day. But here's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is the 99th anniversary of the creation of the Federal Reserve System.
Wow.
Now, guess what? Okay, there's three standard lengths of a business contract in common law. And the longest one is 99 years. In other words, you pretty much, according to English law and American law, if you institute a corporation, the longest you can charter it for is 99 years. That doesn't mean you can't renew it at the end of the 99 years, but you generally, if you have such a charter, then you usually revise it and turn it into something else at the end of the 99 years. So the charter for the Federal Reserve System is about to be up on the very date that the Mayan calendar will end. And, you know, I find that hard to believe as a coincidence, but I don't know. I can't really explain exactly what it means. It seems to me like that it might tie in with what I'm saying, though, of the death of an old economic system and the birth of a new one.
Very interesting, yeah. It's like, it's weird to think that these dudes who create the Federal Reserve 99 years ago, you know, what they're up on the Mayan prophecies and stuff. It's very strange. You know, you wonder, you know, how that all comes together.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they were. Maybe they just had a different
calendar of some sort.
Calendar, secret calendar in their own Masonic lodge or secret society that they were part of at the time that made them pick that date. Or maybe it was just the forces of the universe operating without their awareness.
Could be. Well, Tracy, it's been great catching up with you and delving into these topics. I got to say, as I said at the beginning of the show, you are one of the sharpest people in esoterica, genre for genre. And every time I have a conversation with you, I feel like you're pulling me up to your level because you're operating on just this wavelength that I can only sort of glimpse and get an idea of when I read your stuff. So, I mean, I'm just really amazed by the depth and the level of research and insight you have into so much stuff, especially a lot of these really arcane topics that I can't really wrap my mind around. Like I said, I feel like you pull me up to those levels when we talk. So hopefully I'm not pulling you down.
Not at all. Of course. No, I enjoy this very much.
And, it's been great having you back on the show. Obviously, this won't be the last time we talk to you. We're going to have you back on in the future. But, you know, best of luck during these tumultuous times. And hopefully, you know, next time we're talking, we'll be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel on its way and it won't be an oncoming train.
That'll be great. I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Big, big thanks to Tracy Twyman for coming on the show and sharing so much information and so much of her time. Check out her website, www.tracyrtwyman.com. Fantastic website full of awesome info on all the stuff she has been talking about over the last couple hours here on the program. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback. And we got three emails here, so let's just dive on into the mailbag. First one comes from Steven, no hometown listed, and here's what he has to say. I really enjoy your show and have listened to every episode. I enjoy the questions you ask and the guests you have, but I do have a suggestion and a question. Why do all your shows have two intros? First, there's the intro where you tell us about the guest and their background, talk about what you like about their book, their research, and all.
but then you do basically the same thing again on the pre-recorded interview part of the show. It takes so much time up that can be used for longer interviews. I just thought I'd ask and hope you can address this on the show itself. Thank you, Stephen. Well, thank you for writing in, Stephen. I appreciate your feedback. I am appreciative also, obviously, of your longtime support of the program. And you definitely raise a very interesting question. I guess the real reason why we have such long intros at the beginning of the pre-recorded part is just a matter of habit. That's how we started doing the program, with those sort of short summaries of the impending conversation. And over time, they've just gotten longer and longer as we've taken care of in-house notes at the beginning and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I've become cognizant of the fact that those intros at the beginning are definitely getting a little bit too long, so I'm going to try and cut those down. Although you do raise sort of perhaps a misconception here, where you say that that time could be used for longer interviews. The pre-recorded parts at the beginning of the show are taped well after the interviews, so there's really no correlation between the length of one and the length of the other. They're really unrelated, although I agree with you on the point that sometimes a lot of stuff seems to get repeated, or just a lot of ground seems to get recovered between the two introductions. And I've become more and more, as I said, cognizant of that, and I'm trying to do my best to tighten up those intros and get folks right into the conversation, because I know a lot of people tune in to hear that and just zip right through the pre-recorded introduction. Believe me, I'm well aware of that. So I'm going to try and tighten those up and hopefully get people right into the meat of the episode as soon as possible. You know, the show is an evolving beast, and the more I hear from folks with these kind of suggestions and stuff, the more it affects me as I move forward in how we put it all together. So I appreciate the feedback, Stephen, and thank you for being thoughtful about it and not being rude about it or anything like that, and really coming at it with an inquisitive mind. Next email comes from Andrea, no hometown listed. Here's what she has to say. I'm a newcomer to the show. I've been digging through the archives, and I'm really enjoying it. Good, creepy stuff. I have a question. Is there a topic that seriously scares you? Something you hope isn't real? If so, what do you do about it? For me, it's the djinn. The thought of them scares the crap out of me. All I can do is try not to dwell on it and think good thoughts. Congrats on a great show, and looking forward to the rest of Season 6. Andrea. Thank you for writing in, Andrea. Welcome to the fold. I hope you're enjoying your swim through the deep archives of BOA Audio. Tons of episodes there to check out, well over 150 programs, so chances are there's going to be some other stuff there that spooks you as you keep on listening. I gave it some thought, really, and there's not too much that particularly scares me, although I guess the idea of sort of being harassed or watched or something like that kind of creeps me out, in the sense that I've heard from guests, you know, who say that they've been harassed by the government and stuff like that. Thankfully, that sort of thing's never happened to me, but it does sort of put me off a little bit, more than really the specific topics that we cover here on the show. I'm not particularly worried about UFOs or Bigfoot or something like a global conspiracy. I mean, that's completely out of my hands. Something like 2012, you know, let's say there is some giant disastrous world-shaking event where, you know, 90% of the population dies. What am I supposed to do about that? What could I possibly do about that? Really nothing. So I just don't worry about things that are out of my hands. The weirder stuff I find that I look at with more fascination. So things like ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot, I'm really just more intrigued by rather than frightened. But I guess the whole idea, you know, of government harassment, people reading your mail or listening to your phone calls, that kind of tweaks me out a little bit. Thankfully, that sort of thing hasn't happened to me, but certainly that's something that has sort of gotten under my skin over the last few years, as I've talked to more and more people who've had some really chilling stories about odd coincidences, quote-unquote, that have happened to them over the years. Anyway, thank you for writing in, Andrea. Much appreciated. Keep an eye out for those djinn. They have heard your call, and now they're probably hot on your trail. I probably shouldn't say that. Now she's going to be even more scared. So don't worry about the djinn, Andrea. I'm hoping for your sake that they are more mischievous than evil. Final email this week comes from Lawrence, no hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. The Stan Gordon interview was awesome. Maybe you are just too young to remember this and to ask the question, but back in the 70s they had a TV show called The $6 Million Man, and there were a series of episodes in which he encounters a Bigfoot, and then discovers that Bigfoot is working for ancient aliens who are hiding in an underground base. The episodes are on YouTube if you look up History of Bigfoot and Bionic Man. I just watched a few clips for the first time since I was like 7 years old, and it is amazing. There is even an abduction-like scene in which Steve Austin is lying on a table, and the aliens are standing around him, reading his mind. I thought for sure you were going to mention this to Stan Gordon, since the show clearly ties Bigfoot with aliens. My guess is that the story was inspired by the PA events a few years earlier. Maybe you could watch it and then get that Hollywood and UFOs guy back on. Was his name Bruce Rux or something like that? He would definitely be worth bringing back. Thanks for the great programming. I know you deny it, but if you are indeed burning out, don't let us listeners bully you into keeping on with it. I am currently publishing a podcast about the Mahabharata, and I know that it will come to an end when I get to the end of the story. You, on the other hand, don't really have a good stopping point. You just need to quit when you've done what you set out to do. Maybe after you've interviewed Stan Friedman for the 10th time, you'll throw in the towel. Either way, take care, Lawrence. Thanks for writing in, Lawrence. Let me address your points here as we go along the list. First of all, I thoroughly enjoyed the Stan Gordon interview as well. Thought it was fantastic and fascinating that this story had gone under the radar for so many years. I know a lot of people had heard about it, but you'd think it would be much, much bigger than it really is nowadays. Regarding the $6 Million Man episode, that is definitely way before my time. I was born in 79, so I really was not even cognizant of the $6 Million Man Bigfoot storyline, but perhaps I'll bring it up with Bruce Rux next time he's on the show. Good callback on your part, Lawrence. Bruce is a good friend. We still keep in touch quite a bit, and we are working on bringing him back here for Season 6, so stay tuned for that. And since you have mentioned this story, I will try and bring it up to him when we get him back on the show. With regards to the whole idea of burning out, I just can't go over this enough with you guys. I'm not burning out. The real story of 2011 so far here for BOA Audio is that going into this year, I really want to take the steps to make sure that BOA Audio can survive in perpetuity, that we can keep this program going over the next few years at least. And the only way for me to do that was to find sufficient funding on a serious level to keep the whole operation running. And that's what I've been doing. I've been working side gigs and side jobs to make that happen. And as that's gone down, it's been sort of hit or miss. It's been touch and go. We've been trying to find the right formula to make it all happen. I'm sitting here right now very, very confident that we have found the magic touch, if you will, on how we can make this happen. I'm working at a very awesome job right now that is very flexible and very supportive of BOA. So I feel like we're going to look back on these early months of 2011 and say, yeah, it was a rough patch, but it was what we had to do to make sure that BOA was here in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and onward. There is no burnout on my part with regards to the world of esoterica and the paranormal. I'm still tremendously fascinated by this very mysterious world in which we live. And that's going to be borne out over the next few weeks and months as we continue onward here with the second half of Season 6. But I appreciate your support, Lawrence. I understand where you're coming from. And thank you for, you know, having my back, if you will. So those are the emails from the listeners. Thanks once again to Lawrence, Andrea, and Stephen for writing in. For all those folks out there who'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, you can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com, banalofamerica.com, and click the contact button. And if you want something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, the usofe.com, theusofe.com. We call it BOA's Paranormal Playground. If you couldn't get the URL down just now, simply go to Banal of America and click the forum button. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, so feel free to befriend me, follow me, and poke me. I'd love to hear from you on those awesome sites as well. Up next, it is the thanks portion of the program, so allow me to tip my cap and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Tons of new columns up at BOA, tons of new pieces in the works from the BOA staff, tremendously detailed and quite in-depth from the awesome writers at Banal of America. We say it all the time here at the end of the show, and it is the truth, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns at Banal of America, then you're only getting half of the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Normally, this is the part of the program where I pass the bucket around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to the franchise here and help us keep the whole operation up and running and freely available. But we're going to go in a different direction once again here at the end of the show, since I am a part of this exciting film project with Paul Kimball and Red Star Films, Beyond Best Evidence, The UFO Enigma. This is a very exciting project Paul and I have been working on, and it is going to be crowdsourced, which means we need donations from folks out there to make it happen. And you can find out more about it at Indiegogo.com/UFO. That's spelled Indiegogo.com/UFO. The gist of it is that we're going to be examining the various theories on what UFOs are with some of the brightest minds in the world of ufology. I know Stan Friedman's already on board, and a whole bunch of other big names are lining up to be a part of this film. But in order for us to make it happen, we need donations from folks out there to actually create this film. So go to Indiegogo.com/UFO or go to banalofamerica.com and click the Beyond Best Evidence button. It's right there on the homepage, and that'll bring you to the website with more information. And with this special campaign, each level of donation comes with a whole bunch of different perks that you'll receive as the film is being made or after it is completed. So be sure to check out the various stages and tiers of donation levels and find out perhaps what you could get for a small donation and the cool stuff you get as the donations get larger and larger. Beyond Best Evidence, The UFO Enigma, this is your chance to help us make a UFO film that is not beholden to the cable networks and is more in keeping with the true spirit of Banal of America and our many, many friends and supporters. Next week on the program, we're going to be revisiting one of the more pernicious theories in the world of esoterica. I'm talking about the moon hoax theory. This was a guess that was suggested by one of the BOA audio listeners. He is Jarrah White. Man comes from Australia. He is a hardcore moon hoax enthusiast, and he's got tons and tons of videos up on YouTube. We got linkage to his stuff on BOA right now. And I know some of you out there are probably rolling your eyes saying, oh, Jesus, man, moon hoax, Banal, really? What is this all about? Well, let me tell you, folks, I went into it kind of with the same attitude. I'm not a big moon hoax fan myself, so I wanted to look at it from a completely different point of view, and that is, we've all heard the moon hoax argument. We've all heard the Van Allen belt thing and the whole thing about the flag moving and the lighting and all that stuff. So I went into this conversation with Jarrah White, who bills himself as the grandson of the moon hoax theory, with the intention of finding out more about moon hoax theory itself. Where did this come from? How has that evolved? If Jarrah White is the grandson of moon hoax theory, then who is the father and the grandfather of this field? And how do they all feel about the really lackluster standing that moon hoax theory has in the world of esoterica and in the mainstream? Altogether, you're going to hear a real fourth wall smashing edition of the program. We're not going to go over a whole bunch of ground that has already been covered in any other moon hoax discussion you've heard out there. I'm sure we touch on some of the theories that are prevalent in moon hoax research, But the big dog of this conversation is Moonhoax research itself. What is this all about? How could it ever be resolved? Just a whole bunch of sort of real deep questions about the moon hoax theory. So I hope folks check that one out. Don't roll your eyes. Give it a chance. I think you're going to find it tremendously enlightening. That's next week on BOA Audio, Gerard White talking about the moon hoax theory. And on that note, we close the book on another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Big, big thanks once again to Tracy Twyman. Big thanks to Andrea, Stephen, and Lawrence for writing in for BOA Audio listener feedback. And, of course, super huge, monumentally appreciative thanks to the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the ones who are tuning in right now, the folks who have had unending support of this program. You guys are awesome. I cannot thank you enough for what you do for this program. Thank you so much for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.